It's Top 100 Prospects Week at Baseball America. And if you haven't already seen it, we have a breakdown of the top prospects on the Top 100. In fact, I have a link hopefully you could click on right there. But now we're going to talk about players further down in the Top 100 because there's interesting players all through the Top 100. And so for today's video, I asked various Baseball America staffers to highlight a pair of players, a hitter and a pitcher, that they find fascinating from the current 2026 Baseball America Top 100. So, Carlos, the position player on the top 100 that you're going to talk about is one who was considered a potential first-round pick in the 2024 draft class. Fell all the way to the third round, but here we are, not that long later. He's changed teams, and he's now a top 100 prospect.
Yeah, Mike Sirota coming out of Northeastern entering his draft year. Before the season started, we viewed him as a top 10 prospect. He kind of checked all the boxes. He was a center fielder with plus defense. He had a strong arm. He ran well. He had an excellent understanding of the strike zone. He made a lot of contact, and he was also coming off a sophomore season where he hit for a lot of power. His stock fell significantly that spring. The power backed up. He didn't really hit as well as people expected. He fell to the third round, and then, like you said, he changed teams, and it really feels like the player that I think he is today is much more along the lines of that preseason Mike Sirota than he was at the time of the draft, which really just feels like a great win for the Dodgers. Why I like Sirota so much now, why I liked him then and was surprised to see his fall is I just think he's an extremely well-rounded player who does everything on the field at a high level. And I'm even surprised by the amount of power that he's shown in pro ball. I think that's the one area of his game that you could always maybe critique a little bit and nitpick a little bit. Even with his sophomore season power surge, you can always point to the metal bat environment of college baseball. A lot easier to hit home runs. His exit velocity data and just the physicality that he has was never exceptional. But he had a 90th percentile exit velocity just north of 107 miles per hour last year. And then when you combine that impact that he showed with an uncanny ability to recognize balls and strikes, lay off pitches out of the zone, make contact, if we're now layering on that sort of power production from Sirota, I just think it's a player who has potential all-star upside and is going to give you value in every area of the game. I guess the one question I might have is, what's he going to perform like at higher levels? He only has 35 games at high A right now. He's going to be 23 years old in the 2026 season. So you'd like to see him do that in the upper levels. But I just have a lot of confidence in the well-rounded nature of Sirota's game.
The big thing I want to see is just let's see him fully healthy again. He had a knee injury that cost him a couple of months last year into the season early. Supposed to be full to go for spring training. But obviously for a guy who, you know, it has been a little bit of an up and down road, we'll see, you know, hopefully a fully healthy Mike Sirota in 2026. And he is a member of our 2026 Top 100 Prospect Rankings. And also, Carlos, you're on the pitching side. You're highlighting a player who I would say that there's a number of very intriguing pitching prospects who kind of leapt onto the Top 100 this year, including Braylon Doty.
Yeah, Braylon Doty, we had pretty exciting expectations for him coming out of the draft. I think as soon as he got into Cleveland's system after he was signed as a supplemental first rounder in the 2024 draft, the Guardians themselves, they were obviously high on his breaking ball before signing him. That's part of the reason that he was their target with that pick. But once he got into their system and their pitching coaches started seeing him rip off the breaking ball that he throws, they were even more excited about that pitch. And then he's just coming off a phenomenal 2025 first year of pro ball. He posted a 3.48 ERA over 22 starts. He struck out 27.3% of batters. And I think the figure that you really are going to love when you look at a pitcher like Braylon Doty is the 6.4% walk rate. That's a tremendous walk rate for a 19-year-old pitcher in his first year at pro ball. And I think moving forward, I would expect him to be among the best strike throwing pitching prospects in the game. I think there are some command indicators that he has, even beyond just the pure walk rate, like the areas of the zone he's hitting with his specific pitches. I just have a lot of confidence that at the very least, you're getting a high floor pitcher. And with the power that he has with the fastball, it's a pitch that was up to 96, 97 miles per hour. I think he's going to make that pitch a weapon moving forward, at least an above average fastball for me. The ability to land that pitch for strikes and set up what I think is a plus or potentially double plus curveball right now. He added power to that breaking ball in his first year in pro ball. And I think Braylon Doty is the sort of advanced athletic body control pitcher who seems to really have a feel for pitch shapes. It's common for a lot of organizations, and the Guardians are one of these, where you really limit the arsenal of young pitchers and kind of let them establish themselves, work on a few specific things, and then you build on that once they have some success. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Braylon Doty really started to expand his arsenal in a way that's really exciting. He's been primarily a fastball, curveball pitcher now. He threw a slider in the past in high school. He's got a changeup that I think can be a quality pitch. And if he winds up being one of these pitchers who's got a curveball, who's got a slider, who's got a sweeper slider, I just think his ability to manipulate the ball and make it go in different ways and add power, his touch and feel is just such a separator for pitchers at this age group. I'm fascinated by what he's already done and what he could be with more strength and just more experience in the minors. So I think he's got a chance to really rocket up our 100 even more. I was glad that he was on the back of our top 100. I think if at the end of this year he was a top 30, top 40 prospect, that wouldn't shock me at all.
I mean, you could almost view the back of the top 100 for these kind of pitching prospects as kind of, it's not a waiting room. They're already on the top 100, but it's an area where you put them there, and then let's see where they go. They're right now in that spot where a little bit of step back, they could slide off of it. Mm-hmm. But with a step forward, they could really jump into that top 50, which puts them among the elite pitching prospects in the game.
Yep.
So, Jeff, as we have each of our prospect team members take a look at two prospects from the top 100, your picks, we're going to start with Cardinals outfielder Joshua Baez. I would say among the players who are on this top 100 who came the furthest in 2025 to climb onto our 2026 list, Baez has to be one of the guys who stands out. Maybe came the furthest because he really went from a guy who was far, far, far off of the top 100 coming into 25 to a guy who is on our 2026 top 100 prospects rankings.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, in my time covering prospects, he made one of the more remarkable transformations from a hit tool perspective. This was a guy that, you know, dating back to, you know, his time as a high school player in the Northeast, talented two-way player, exciting athlete with a ton of, you know, upside, you know, huge power and speed, arm strength, sort of all those things. There was always sort of the lingering swing and miss concerns, even when he was playing sort of subpar New England prep competition. That kind of played out over the early years of his career. You know, even last season, had a decent sample size, had a 37.4% miss rate, a 28.1% in zone miss rate. That's typically the type of numbers a few years into your professional career that could more or less sink you. It means that you're pretty much not a prospect. Really concerning stuff. And he was somebody that, you know, was mentioned as somebody who potentially could be in the back end of the Cardinals top 30. Internally, they had talked about some of the adjustments he had made at the end of the season. But I think I took it, and a lot of scouts, you know, opposing scouts in the industry sort of took it from a show me approach. We haven't seen this from this guy yet. A small sample size isn't telling me anything. Well, Baez did come out and really show that he had improved all throughout the 2025 season. You know, the sort of baseball card numbers speak for themselves, but the underlying numbers back it as well. You know, that 28% in zone miss rate dropped to a 19.8% in zone miss rate, which is a little bit below average. Nearly 40% miss rate dropped to 25.9% this season across all competition, reaching the upper minors for the first time in his career. And he did that without having to sacrifice his power or the good angles that sort of got him here. Is a guy that maybe doesn't pull the ball all that much, but as we know, with guys that have the type of immense power that Baez has, he doesn't have to. 107.1 90th percentile exit velocity this season, a 91.5 average exit velocity, and hit a ball 114. There's power here. Then on top of that, there's speed, athleticism, and defensive value. I think he actually, you know, he was never in bad shape, but I think maybe took off some of the excess weight and looked a little bit more svelte and athletic this year. And I think the stolen base numbers and just the underlying performance defensively really backs that. And that's what makes him such an exciting top 100 prospect, because I think this is now one of the highest power speed ceilings that we have on the list. And that's something that we would have shook our head and thought you were, you know, joking if you said this to us a year ago. So kudos to the Cardinals, and certainly kudos to Baez for putting in the work and getting where he needed to be.
And the pitcher that you want to highlight is one that I would say is probably a little bit less known kind of in the overall public space, although I think his name's getting more and more out there. But what is it about Caden Scarborough, the Rangers right-hander, that kind of pulled him up onto the Baseball America 2026 Top 100?
Yeah, and I have some regrets with Caden Scarborough. Was in consideration for the article I do sort of on the eve of the season every year with my 20 breakout pitching prospects. I really did really well with the names that were on there last year, but I could have done even better if I had included Caden Scarborough. And I had gotten some tips from some folks, you know, that had scouted him as an amateur, and then some others that had sort of seen him throughout spring training and even earlier on in the off season. So he took a really big jump forward. The extension has climbed. The velocity has climbed. His direction to the plate is you know, much more streamlined, and that's created much better angles out of the hand. So we saw that throughout the season. He was an excellent performer. You know, is now sitting 93 to 95 miles an hour. You know, with 6¾ to 6.89 inches of extension consistently, which lowers that release height to about 5'2", which is really, really low release height. But beyond that, what makes this fastball special is he also gets behind the ball well, creates ride, and a lot of arm side run. And it's sort of an interesting sort of efficient spin axis that's almost reminiscent of a two-seamer, but is a four-seamer. So it plays really well, show the ability to consistently land that pitch in zone with a nearly 60% in-zone rate and a strike rate hovering around that magic 70% number. He misses bats with that pitch. He gets swings and misses above the zone with that pitch. And I think because of sort of the angles and the arm side movement, it's a really deadly combination and a unique look out of the hand. But that's not his only good pitch, JJ. He has also got a sweeper that sits 81 to 82, will touch 84, 85, but it averages somewhere between 15 to 17 inches of sweep, really consistently plays off of the fastball well. And that's a deadly pitch to right-handers and something that he can backdoor and steal strikes with to left-handers as well. He's got a good changeup. It's still developing, but has some sort of splitterish traits and a good separation in terms of release and plane. Off of that fastball. When we talk about fastballs and projection on changeups, a lot of that comes down to not only the difference in speed, but really sort of the difference in break. Is there a certain point where, you know, it looks like a fastball all along that plane, and then maybe 5-6 feet before the plate, all of a sudden takes a sort of dastardly turn. So I think there's maybe projection for that third pitch to take an even bigger step. But we're talking about 2+ pitches here, a really athletic thrower, and more power projection to come as well.
To give an example of the transformation, you just laid it out. Now, it was a brief pro exposure in 2024, his first season. But it was a 16%, really a 17%, 16.9% walk rate in his limited time in 2024. 2025, 6% walk rate. He showed through a lot more strikes, basically blitzed through low A, the Carolina League, and then finishes that year with 3 starts, doesn't allow a run in 3 starts in high A Hub City Spartanburgers, which I think will probably be the place he starts 2026 as well, but definitely an arm to watch. And an arm who clearly earned a spot moving up onto the Baseball America Top 100. So Josh, the Yankees have a pair of prep draft picks, shortstops in the top 100. George Lombard Jr. is their number one prospect, but coming up not far behind him is a 2025 draftee, Dax Kilby. What stands out to you about Dax Kilby?
The first thing that stuck out about Dax was the response you got to him. You know, I think I mentioned somewhere or in chats that no fewer than 4 scouts who saw him in the Florida State League, who were not employed by the Yankees, texted me to say, hey, this guy is real and you've got him way too low on your list, which is fine. I expect that to happen after the draft. And then you talk to the people internally and they're over the moon about him. And I think I mentioned on some of the podcasts that, you know, the margin between he and George Lombard for number one is not far, even though there's an Elmer Rodriguez sitting in the middle. But for the top, you know, position player prospect in the system, it's razor thin. And I positioned Dax where I did with the anticipation that there's a chance he's the number one prospect in the system by midseason.
And when you look at that, the other thing that stands out is if you look at our top 100, he ranks among Eli Willits is ahead of him, but there are not many prep shortstops from last year's draft who are ahead of him, even though Dax Kilby was not the second or the third or the fourth high school shortstop whose name, you know, heard his name called in the draft. It does look right now, early on, but it does look like kind of a little bit of a draft coup for the Yankees, it would appear.
Yeah, and I remember asking someone internally, like, what made you guys believe in him as a hitter? And, you know, he went into this deep metric that is called he hit the ball a lot, and he hit it hard, and he hit it often. And I think a lot of times we kind of make this harder than it needs to be. He didn't swing and miss much. He hit a lot of pitch types. He hit it with more impact than would be expected. He's plenty athletic. I know there are systems outside of the Yankees who valued him very highly in the draft. Yeah, it was a really great debut, and I expect a lot out of him in 2026.
Defensively, how good is he? How likely is it that he is not talking about other players that could block him, but how likely is it that he's capable of being a solid major league shortstop, or is he more likely to move positions?
Yeah, I was going to say not very. He's probably going to move positions. There's questions about his arm. I think it might fit at second base. There's been people who might put it in the outfield. If you change that arm stroke up a little bit, but offensively right now is kind of the meal ticket. We'll see how it goes as he moves up the ladder. But, you know, you did mention a couple guys who are ahead of him in the pecking order. You know, Anthony Volpe exists and is in the big leagues. George Lombard is the better defender by a wide margin among those two. And then it's Kilby.
So also on the pitching side, Josh, looking at Mariners right-hander Ryan Sloan. He is one of the our picks to click in 2025. Here we are in 2026. He kind of took a step forward, but not a dramatic one last year. What are you expecting? What stands out about him and has you excited about him? Top 100 prospect Ryan Sloan.
I mean, I had him really high on my list. He might have been like the second or third pitching prospect on my list. And I think we're underselling how good his season was. Like, he finished the year, our handbook gives him 3+ pitches with an average cutter and above average control. He struck out 77 and walked 15 in 71 innings at Modesto, then was they punched out 13 more and walked nobody in three starts at Everett. You got to hit a little bit harder, but if you've ever been to Everett, you understand that a fly ball there is danger no matter what. I mean, you're talking about alleyways that might be 360. I remember going back in the day and someone asking me to go see George Kirby. And someone asked, you know, how does George Kirby give up any runs here? And I got into the park and I go, oh, that's how. Because these fences are super far in and you can't do much about them because of where the park is built. I thought he had an outstanding season. And, you know, you're also in the correct organization or one of the correct organizations to develop pitching. I don't know if you've noticed, but the pitching rotation in Seattle is very homegrown. And they've got a lot of more of them coming. So I trust them to develop guys and get them to the big leagues. So I thought Ryan Sloan took a momentous step forward and would have taken even further step forward had, you know, the eye injury not happened.
But Ryan Sloan, as you said, a pitcher who has potential for 3+ pitches and really is kind of
a one average. And you've got a big physical frame. He's everything you look for in a power pitcher. Like, I mean, obviously there's coats of polish to still apply and there's a lot of projection involved in terms of the stuff, but you can have much worse templates than what you've got with Ryan Sloan. So I loved him when I saw him last year and I was looking forward to seeing him later in the year, but he got promoted. So that didn't happen, but yeah, he's my pick to click last year. And he's my pick to click this year among them. I'm sure we're only talking about one person here.
But that's Ryan Sloan, another member of the Baseball America Top 100 Prospects list.
Every day, companies you've probably never heard of are making billions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records in the internet and then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace making money off of your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura's online security capabilities have allowed me to feel safe when it comes to my online presence. Aura fights back. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal. It is a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep logins safe, and spam call protection to cut off scammers. Aura also scans the dark web for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, and passwords, and notifies you instantly if they're exposed. Aura also removes what is already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That's enough time for Aura to start removing your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are safeguarded. That's aura.com/remove. Certain terms apply. See the site for details.
There are so many shortstops in this year's top 100, but there are not many who are guys who have emerged as much as giant shortstop Johnny Level. Jesus, what stands out about Level and why he's on the top 100?
Well, just to preface this, I think I saw Level play this year on the backfield more than I'd seen my own family. That doesn't have to do with me being a bad family member. It's the fact that they're in California and Johnny Level plays down the street from where I live. And yeah, I mean, right off the bat, when you look at him, I mean, he's not your typical sized, you know, top 100 shortstop. You know, he's a 5'10" guy, 160 pounds. But I mean, the looks are deceiving because he has, you know, has some pretty good contact rate, but he also has some pretty good power to go with it. You know, more power than your typical size, above average juice. You know, his 90th percentile exit velocity was 103.5 miles per hour. And also he's a switch hitter, so he can do it from both sides of the plate. And, you know, Josh Norris ranked him as the number one Arizona Complex League prospect. And without a doubt, I think that was certainly the case. You know, there might have been a close number two or number three, but he was definitely ahead above everybody. I mean, as a hitter, I mean, this guy was able to hit to the ball all fields, you know, and, you know, does a really good job getting contacts in the zone. I think that's what his short swing specific is able to set him up. You know, it limits his exploitable holes in his swing. And, you know, for a young player his age, you know, for him to be able to do that's obviously really, really impressive. And then, you know, I know we're talking on the hitter-wise, but also defensively too, played some of the best defense that I've seen on those backfields. And as you know, those are pretty bad defense on the backfields too. So Tame had been an overall player. Eventually, you know, played the entire year in the Arizona Complex League before being promoted over to Low A San Jose, where, you know, he played a little bit of second base too and got some reps in once that crowded field of draft picks came into San Jose. So this guy, I mean, really, really good, and really good for the Giants to be able to have him too. So many guys represented in their top 100 compared to past years too.
He's not the only young shortstop that we have for the Giants in the top 100. Joshua Gonzalez is also, we haven't forgot about him. He's on the top 100 as well. The thing you mentioned of Level that I do find interesting is, as you mentioned, he's a shorter guy. I think that's something that's changed in my time at BA, is kind of the realization short but strong is really valuable, because you talked about it's short levers. It's that back control that's a little easier to do. It's easier to have fewer holes if you don't have kind of the long levers, kind of the bigger strike zone. Because by the way, if you're taller, you're going to have a bigger, not just, it is already a bigger strike zone, but the ABS challenge system is mathematically a bigger strike zone for those players as well. All of that fits in, but the key thing with a shorter player, smaller stature player is do you have enough strength, enough power to make it work? Johnny Level, he's kind of already showing you signs of that, is he not?
No, he absolutely is. You know, for a shorter player, he does, I would say, not have necessarily like a thicker lower half, but a lot of his strength comes from the lower half of his body, you know, and he does a good job, you know, moving his hips and putting himself in a position to really generate as much power as he can. And I would say to all powers of the field too. And I mean, for him to be able to do it from both sides of the play too, at such a young age as well, you know, I think also adds to that. It's going to be interesting to see just, you know, with the amount of infielders, specifically shortstop, that the Giants have right now in the lower levels. Obviously, we mentioned Joe Swart too. And then Gavin Keeling, their most recent, their first round draft pick this past year to see how they're going to play it out. But I mean, this year in low A San Jose, where he's going to face, you know, a little bit pitchers with a little bit more premium stuff and a little bit control, I think it's going to be a true test to see how he's able to hold up in the long run.
So on the pitching side, the A's, we just talked about the Giants have a number of shortstops on the top 100. The A's have a couple of shorter left-handers on the top 100. Actually, they're back-to-back. We have Jamie Arnold and Gage Jump. You wanted to talk about Jamie Arnold.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, I got to see Jamie Arnold, you know, a couple of days after, I mean, a week or so after he was drafted, you know, pitch out of the Mesa Complex, you know, was just doing tosses and stuff like that. He actually didn't get the pitch off the mound because he suffered a finger injury that set back from his regular throwing program. So he did not pitch at all or anything like that. He did go through whatever he could of his throwing program. But in a sense, you know, I think the biggest thing, especially since it was my first year truly working on the draft side, is coming into the year, Jamie Arnold was somebody who could have gone number one overall. But then there was just a handful of other pitchers that just kind of skyrocketed. Cade Anderson, Liam Doyle, a couple, you know, to name within this draft class. And what I think Jamie Arnold does really, really well is his unusual delivery. You know, he has a low three-quarters delivery with a low-release, explosive, athletic delivery. And he's been compared quite a lot to Chris Sale. Obviously, Chris Sale a little bit taller. Arnold stands at 6'1". But the deception that he's able to create on his delivery, you know, it really helps the plunging arm action that he's able to do. And then, I mean, also like the pitch mix that he has too, you know, a fastball that averages 93 miles per hour that comes at with you that angle. That's pretty impressive to do so. But also a mid-80s sweeper that, you know, was able to generate a 70% strike rate, you know, in college from both sides. You know, he has you know, the premium stuff, the deception, and also the command to be able to do it. So, you know, it's going to be a big year for him. You know, he's going to be in big league camp this upcoming year. David Forst already mentioned that, and it's going to be an important year. This could also be a quick riser within the system. I mean, we've seen so many pitchers ascend, Trey Savage being one of them this year. And I think in this class, along with Cade Anderson, I think Arnold is in prime position to be able to rise quickly if everything goes according to plan.
It wouldn't be shocking at all. I think I completely agree with you. It wouldn't be shocking at all if we saw Jamie Arnold in the big league rotation at some point in 2026. I would say 2027 would kind of be the slower path for him. Kind of, it's going to be this year or next, and very possibly this year. So that's Jamie Arnold and Johnny Lovell, two more members of the Baseball America Top 100. So, Ben, this is a Top 100 that is filled with shortstops. It's the most shortstops we've ever had on the Top 100. But one that jumps out kind of at the middle of this list is Red Sox shortstop Franklin Arias. What makes him stand out to you?
I'm really excited about Franklin Arias. He finished the year as a 19-year-old in Double-A. So the Red Sox are pushing him extremely aggressively, and you can see why. I mean, just watching him on defense. I mean, look, there are a lot of shortstops who are in our top 100, and a lot of them will stay at shortstop. We know a lot of them are going to go to third base or second base or maybe even a corner outfield spot, maybe even first base in some cases. But Franklin Arias, I feel really strongly about his ability to stick at shortstop. He defends his position at a really high level, and he's not like your typical super bursty, explosive type player. He's probably one of the slower shortstops just in terms of raw foot speed, but I don't think you really need to be extremely fast to play shortstop. What he is he's quick and he's extremely instinctive. He just has a nose for the ball. He retops well. He just has a knack for being in the right place at the right time. And he'll make those highlight reel type plays for you, going deep into the hole, coming in on the ball. But he's also pretty steady at making the secure, reliable type plays that you need from a shortstop that you don't often see in a young shortstop. And I'm talking so much about his glove right now. If he was just like a good glove shortstop, that's not my flavor. I like guys who can hit. And Franklin Arias has outstanding hand-eye coordination. He rarely swings and misses. And I think it's to the point sometimes where he can get himself in a little bit of trouble. Well, he'll swing at some maybe borderline pitches, even just outside the strike zone, and he's still able to put the bat to the ball. So I like having that ability to put to the bat to the ball. I do think he's going to have to tighten up his strike zone judgment a little bit, but also he's 19 years old. He's playing in high A mostly last year. So I think that maybe has something to do with it. And I do also think there's going to be some more power in there than what we've seen so far. I mean, he is not, I don't think he's this like light slap hitting shortstop. We saw him hitting balls up to 110 miles an hour this year at 19 years old. That's pretty strong already. And I think there's going to be some more power that comes. Now, is it going to be 10 to 15 home runs? That's probably what like most people would say. I'm actually more optimistic. He gets to 15, 20, maybe has some 20 plus home run years in there. And then if you look at the sum of the parts of a guy who could potentially be a plus defender at shortstop, who puts the bat to the ball the way he can, if he ends up being a 15 plus home run guy, you know, it's a 3-4 win guy. And if he gets to more than that, you're talking about a perennial all-star.
When I think of a Ben Badler type player, you love the hitters who can then develop power. We've seen examples of this. I'm not putting him in the Francisco Lindor group, but when Francisco Lindor was coming up as a shortstop, the biggest question was, would his power develop? But he was such a pure hitter. He ended up being a guy who was a 25, 30 home run guy, you know, down the road. In Arias' case, you are talking about a guy, again, when a guy can stick at shortstop like this, there's like that upside that could get there. But the other thing I think that puts him kind of in the middle of the top 100 for us is what you're talking about, that even if that power doesn't develop, if he's just got the hitting ability he does and the defense, it would still be enough to make him a very productive long-term big leaguer potentially.
And I do think there is going to be some more power in there than what we've seen. Obviously, again, I'm obviously not saying he's, you know, going to be the next Mookie Betts, but like Mookie Betts hit zero home runs in the New York Penn League when he was Franklin Arias' age, and he's probably comparable in height. I don't think Franklin Arias is going to have that kind of bat speed or obviously that kind of career, because Mookie Betts, his next stop is going to be Cooperstown. But yeah, I do think there's going to be some more impact coming with Franklin Arias, just as he continues to get stronger, learns which kind of pitches to, you know, maybe get the bat head out a little bit earlier and turn on for power. Because right now he's very content just putting the ball in play. And I think we just see a lot of hitters evolve in terms of both physically and in terms of their approach, in terms of learning which pitches they can take more chances on, try to get off their A swing and try to drive for some power. And I think Franklin Arias fits into that camp of somebody who can potentially do that.
On the pitching side, Kendry Churio is the type of prospect who, to say he raised his profile with what he did, he kind of leapt up our prospect rankings, partly because he's the guy who at a very young age got to low A, was pitching in the playoffs in low A for the Royals at the end of the year. But on top of that, it's a really polished approach, polished kind of pitch mix for a pitcher this young, isn't it, with Kendry Churio?
Yeah, that's what's always stood out about Kendry Churio is just how polished he is, just how advanced he is in terms of his ability to throw strikes. So when he was in Venezuela as an amateur player, which, I mean, geez, was like a year ago, right?
Wasn't long.
Yeah, I talk about rising up the rankings. We literally couldn't rank him at the beginning of 2025 because he was an unsigned player. But, you know, when teams were scouting him, he was, you know, probably sub 6 foot, right-handed pitcher who was throwing, you know, maybe mid to upper 80s, but throwing a lot of strikes, had some ability to manipulate his secondary stuff, but nothing overpowering. And then the velocity just kept ticking up and up and up. And by the time January 15th got here last year, we said he was one of the best pitching prospects in the class, even though he signed for $250,000, which, you know, a solid chunk of money for a pitcher, but certainly not, you know, guys signing for $1 million or $500,000 even. So not like a top 100 bonus in the class. But even as the stuff spiked, you always saw consistent high level strikes from him as an amateur. But you never quite know how that's going to translate until you actually get into professional baseball, even against DSL hitters. And he just carved them up. Like, it was not a challenge for him at all. And he moved so quickly. Like you said, he got to low A by the end of the year at 17 years old. Now he's up to 98 miles an hour. He has feel for spinning a curveball that's getting up toward that 2800 RPM range. There's feel for a changeup in there too. And he's an elite strike thrower. It looks like he's somebody who's going to have 70 control. Not too far from that right now, which is wild to say, so to speak, I guess, at that age. And look, he's probably going to start the year this season in low A as an 18-year-old, he's polished enough. I would expect him to get a promotion if he pitches the way I think he will and get to high A. Now, does he finish the year in double A as an 18-year-old? Maybe. If not, he's going to be starting in double A, I imagine, in 2027 when he's 19 years old. So this is a guy who has a lot of, like you said, polish and pitchability to him. But you compare him to somebody like a David Shields in the Royal system who, okay, Shields is left-handed. He has great control too. Another really polished guy as a teenager in that farm system. But David Shields is, you know, topping out at maybe 93, and maybe there's more to come. I think there probably should be a little bit more still to squeeze out from David Shields. But Kendry Chirio is already throwing up to 98 miles an hour. There's probably maybe a little bit more coming for Kendry Chirio. And he's got feel for spinning a breaking ball, feel for a changeup. Like it's just a really exciting mix of a starter look with both polish and stuff at an extremely young age still.
We always like to say that teams show us what they think about a player by kind of how they move the player. On different teams move players at different rates. But I want to kind of highlight that in Churio's case, because nowadays to bring a player to the States during the season is a very significant decision. A player in the Dominican Summer League does not count towards your domestic U.S. minor league roster limit. The minute you come over, set foot in the States, you do. And the Royals with Churio saw him kind of realize, like you said, he's just not getting enough challenge here to develop, that they were willing to bring him over, really, I would say, ahead of schedule in a lot of ways. That kind of is significant and kind of a little bit of a hint further about what they think about Churio, isn't it?
Yeah, we very rarely see, for different reasons. Some of it's the roster limits. Some of it's, you know, the players want to stay in the DSL for tax reasons. So we rarely see players coming over now for their first season to the United States. They're mostly just staying in the DSL, obviously, like Leo DeVries with the Padres or Ethan Salas with the Padres too. And you know, Salas' brother, Andrew, with the Marlins last year was an exception too. But for the most part, you know, unless it's like an older player who's already 19, 20 years old, something like that, we're very rarely seeing players, even the most advanced players, come straight to the States in their first year. But yeah, I mean, Kendry Chirio, I think they just said, look, this guy is so good. He's an exception. And if you're Kendry Chirio, yeah, it's not that I think he was going to be a slow path to the big leagues, but getting to low A that quickly certainly accelerates his timetable in terms of when he can get to Kansas City.
He's another one to watch on our top 100 prospects list. Kendry Chirio joining the top 100 as an 18-year-old. There are so many intriguing prospects in our top 100 prospect ranking, which are up at baseballamerica.com. But Ian, George Lombard Jr., the Yankees' number one prospect, shortstop prospect, really stands out to you as kind of a fascinating prospect. Why is that?
I think that the main reason is we got such split feedback on him during the ranking process. And he was one of the players that where we initially slotted him, it was kind of split. Half of the feedback we got was he should be higher, and then the other half was he should be lower. And when something like that happens, it makes me really want to dig into and further evaluate why is that the case. Because I feel like generally the feedback you usually get is either in one direction. It's usually pretty good, or you know, move him up a little bit or move him down a little bit. This one, completely way up, way down. We got the whole spectrum. And I think that makes him one of the most interesting prospects heading into 2026. Because you combine that with his pedigree, you know, this is a past first round pick. He plays for a very prominent team in the Yankees. He's their number one prospect. And he's a shortstop. You know, we're talking about the premium position in baseball. And when you have that type of profile, it makes him, I think, just a very interesting prospect heading into the season. And frankly, looking back at last season, also very interesting just because of such the wide range of outcomes you get depending on the scouts you talk to who saw him last year.
So, as you said, he is a split camp player. I feel like that what we're really talking about with Lombard as much as anything is he is the perfect example to me of what of projection and what scouts are trying to do, because it feels like that there is a current disconnect between the results that we've seen most of the time. And he's moved very fast. That's the other thing that we have to add in here is the age at level that he's been at. But the results versus the potential for what he could be. What kind of indicators do you see there that could indicate that he ends up being a player who really kind of blossoms in his 20s and kind of blends that, it could hit those projections that he has, as why, which is why he's as high as he is in our top 100 right now.
Yeah, it's a great point. And as you said, if you really look at it, he's only performed basically for a month, the start of the 2025 season in high A. And he did this as a 20-year-old, which is very impressive. He had a great start, hit 329, 495, 488 in 111 plate appearances, went up to double A, as you said, and struggled. But I think the thing that really stood out to me in digging into him this offseason was the underlying data. There's still a lot of things that you really like here. This is a guy with a very patient approach and a good 16% chase rate. His batted ball, the EVs are good. Average exit velocity was over 90 miles an hour. His 90th percentile was 103.2 miles an hour. Those are both really good numbers for someone his age. The issue is, and I think where why he struggled with, especially when he made the jump to double A, was the contact. There's still some contact issues. There's some swing issues. And I think that's something that could, that scouts who really believe in him think can get ironed out as he moves up the ladder. But I also can understand the skeptics, because you look and there are some red flags there. You know, struggles to elevate the ball, hit 215 in an extended sample in double A, granted, as you said, as a 20-year-old. And so I think that there's just a lot of ways that his development could go, and why that even though he's already in the high minors, this is still, there's a fair amount of risk and variance in his profile.
So the defense, the other thing is that this is a pure shortstop defensively. And that's obviously a key part of this as well. But that's one of the things I think that we want to make sure that we both emphasize, but also don't overemphasize. Because if George Lombard's going to, George Jr. is going to live up to these expectations, the defense we kind of are taking as for granted, it's the bat that has to, he's not going to reach our projections just based on being a good glove, I would assume. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think if you're someone who's in you know, the top 50 of the top 100, we're expecting you to be, you can contribute on both sides of the ball. And the scouts that really like Lombard, they think he's a no-doubt shortstop. And that's something that can carry you so far. But we've seen that there's a limit, or there's a cap if you're just a glove-first player. You know, it's hard to reach his potential, which I think is, you know, a potential first division regular talking to scouts if he can hit. And that's the big question. The defense is there. He's got the range, he's got the arm, he's got the athleticism. It's just now, can he translate that raw ability at the plate that he's shown in spurts, and with the underlying data, can that translate to a sustained period of success at the plate for the Yankees?
So George Lombard Jr. is fascinating from a standpoint of, will we see projection, the reproduction match the projection? Twins left-hander Connor Prelip is fascinating, because every time he gets on the mound, he's been really good. It's just a question of how often is he going to get on the mound, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's a really interesting pitcher to me, and so someone I've seen live multiple times and been very impressed, but that's, you know, he's just not on the mound very much. He threw 82 and two-thirds innings in 2025 between AA and AAA, and that total was more than he had thrown in the previous five seasons combined, to give you some context of how much time he's missed. This guy's had Tommy John surgery, he's had internal brace surgery, and the Twins have been very cautious in bringing him back. But I think that this is the year finally that the kind of the brakes are going to come off. I think he could get up to, I've heard, 125, 150 innings potentially this year. And I think that now that he's in AAA, he's MLB depth, and you can't be as cautious with a guy when you in the, once they get to the big leagues, because, you know, you have a set number of pitchers on those rosters, and everyone's got to be available and in their certain windows. And I think with Prelip that this is a pretty big season for him, because there are some concerns and why I think he's on the back end of the 100, because I think his raw stuff could be commensurate with someone who's, you know, more in the middle of the list. But the injury concerns gives him some reliever risk. And I think this season will be a big one in determining that future outcome for him, whether it's as, you know, a multi-inning reliever or a leverage reliever or as a starter. Because you're talking about a guy with three potential above average to plus pitches. I think that this year they're going to add a fourth pitch, and I think a second breaking ball is the most likely outcome there, whether it be a slider or, excuse me, a curveball, cutter, sweeper, something, one of those, to kind of round out his arsenal. Because I think the Twins know that for him to be a starter, he's going to need another offering to give hitters a different look. And if he can do that, especially given how successful his other pitches are, if he can even, you know, develop a fringy average second breaking ball that can just be a show me pitch, that's a pure starter's arsenal right there. But the lack of track record is, you know, kind of scary. Availability is the name of the game with starting pitchers, and there are just so few starters anymore that even can go 160 innings in a season. But Prelip's never done even close to that. And I think that's what makes him so fascinating, is can he stay on the mound? And if he does, can he sustain the raw stuff that he's shown in, you know, shorter spurts for an extended period of time is a big question mark.
Other thing I'm fascinated to see, we're kind of putting him in the top 100, thinking that there's still a decent chance he's a starter. The other, there has been talk, but maybe he goes into the pen as well. But I'm not even sure necessarily when you, from a durability standpoint, which would be better for him, because obviously to be a major league reliever, yes, you will throw fewer innings, but the wear and tear of getting up and getting down and getting up and getting down and throwing back-to-back days and all that. Again, this is a fascinating, this will be a fascinating development process to watch, I would imagine, from that standpoint. Do you see, like, we see starter traits, but you see, when you come on the durability question, when you come starter versus reliever, what is your sense? And what, you know, when you were reporting on the Twins top 30, what sense did you get of kind of how they look at this?
I think they think of him as a starter, but I think with the way their roster is constructed right now, I could see them kind of breaking him in the majors in a bullpen role with the eye towards building him up to as a starter. The problem with that, though, is what you said. You know, you only have 13 pitcher slots. You figure 8 relievers, and you can't have multiple guys who are unable to pitch on back-to-back days. And with someone like Prelip's injury history, he doesn't strike me as someone you want. You're going to be overly taxing, or you're going to be throwing, you know, 4 times in a week out of the gate. So that just limits when you have one of those spots devoted to a pitcher who can only pitch on a very strict schedule. It's just a lot harder to do that at the major league level than it is in the minor league level when you have the bigger rosters. And so I think that there's a chance for that, but I think he continues to develop as a starter for the reasons I said earlier, where there's an expectation, I think, internally that he can get to maybe as high as 150 innings this year. And it's just, you're not going to get to that total in the bullpen. And with where the Twins are at in their kind of retooling process, they have, I think, the bandwidth to be able to try him out as a starter, because there's just so much more upside in that role. It's just very hard for a pure reliever to make the top 100. And so if someone like Prelip is on it, we got to have a pretty high confidence level that he can start. And I think that internally, and then talking to scouts also, I think there's a pretty high confidence he can do that as long as he can stay healthy.
That is Connor Prelip, one of the more fascinating players in the Baseball America top 100. So there you have it. There you have breakdowns of players up and down the list of the top 100. We hope you enjoyed that and hope you are enjoying many more videos on the Baseball America YouTube page and podcast channel.